My name is Evan Mann, and today, Thursday the 26th of February 2015, I'm talking with Simon Maddox and Jenny Lawton. This conversation is part of the Curtin Living Memories Project, and we're having this conversation in the Canberra and District Historical Society rooms in Curtin. Simon and Jenny are well-known people in Curtin. They're business partners in the Beyond Q bookshop, which for almost 8 years now has been located downstairs in the Curtin shops. They're also partners in life, have a family, and live here in Curtin, only a few minutes' walk away from the shops. So it's a great pleasure to see you both today and to have a yarn with you. I know that books now, and have been for some years, are a very important part of your life, but I also know, and I've been in Canberra a long time, that the family name Lawton and books go together, and have gone together in Canberra for some time now. Do you want to tell us, Jenny, about that, about where the book business started in your family?
Yes, it started. We came from Papua New Guinea so that my dad could finish his master's in linguistics. And he had no means of support, so he's always loved books and decided that in 1975 that would be a time to start a bookshop. So that was a very tiny room, probably 3 by 8 metres or thereabouts, very few books out at Fishwick. And one or two people found out and it started growing, and it was the first
solely second-hand.
Yes, second-hand bookshop in Canberra.
He moved around a bit though, I understand, in Fishwick and other places.
Yes, every time he'd get established they'd raise the rent. So off he'd go again to the next spot. And he found a really nice venue in Wollongong Street where Mr. Bolster became part of the team. And Mr. Bolster was in every advertisement for the bookshop, and he was a Siamese cat. And then one or two other bookshops started happening and business started improving, because bookshops work like a food court, and the more bookshops there are together, the more clientele you attract. So yeah, it went from there.
And I remember you in Hughes. When did you move to Hughes?
Now, we moved to Hughes probably in about
98, I think. 98, it was that he moved in.
Yeah, 98. And that was a huge job, as they all have been, because setting it out, it was just a bare floor downstairs with no shelving, so Dad had to start again. He did that solely on his own, that move, because Simon and I had another business at that time.
Perhaps we should backtrack here. I didn't realise you two had been in business together beforehand, so perhaps this is a good place for Simon to enter the story. And I know, Simon, you had some background in books in your family too.
Yes, you and I. My background was going way back to when I was about 7 or 8. In fact, even younger than that. And my father purchased set up a bookshop and toy shop together in East Africa when we were living there. So, yeah, it was a fun start.
And tell us, before you got to books, though, you had quite a career as a management consultant, didn't you?
Yeah, well, that was after experiencing the bookshop that my father had. I became a management consultant and was doing a lot of training type work and consultancy work around Australia and internationally. And it was during one of those training programs that I actually met Jen. So we had a get together and then got together.
Well, just tell us about the business that you had together.
The business Jen was referring to was one that we got because a client of ours actually went broke. He was an amazing character. His name was Luke, and he had a carpet cleaning business. And I was a management consultant for Luke, but Luke had this passion for independent women. And he loved them to be independent right until such time as they moved in. And then he wanted them to be totally dependent on him. And as a consequence, during the period of time we knew him, I think he went through 2 or 3 divorce-type separations, which left him stony broke, couldn't pay his consultant, and we ended up with a carpet cleaning business as well as our management consultancy practice.
That's when it was called the Management Edge, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, it was too. Yeah, so that was fun.
Okay, so then the big step into the book business. So that must have happened in the late 90s then, was it?
It was actually in 2000.
Right.
Ralph was wanting to work full-time on the dictionary and the translation of the Bible, and was indicating that we ought to seriously think about taking over his shop at that stage. And we talked about it, and essentially what we were going to do was we were going to get it so it was really viable, and then Jen would run it and I'd go back to my consultancy practice. But things didn't quite pan out that way.
Mm.
Did they?
It became Q Consulting.
Well,
then, yes.
Q Consulting Beyond Q. Well, there must be a link there somewhere.
There is. My management consultancy practice was called Q Consulting. In fact, it was called Q Consulting. Then we merged with another group called the Management Edge. And then we demerged with the Management Edge and carried on by ourselves. And we, Beyond Q, became the business that we had that was Beyond Q Consulting. So it's, yeah.
Perhaps we should move then to the book business. And was your coming into the business, or the both of you, coincident with you moving to Curtin?
No, we actually got involved in the business for about 2 years before we moved to Curtin itself, didn't we?
Mm.
Yeah.
So what brought that on, moving to Curtin, which is, of course, the chief point of interest here for us?
Well, we were living on the other side of town in Ngunnawal, and the travel...
40 minutes each way with one lane on the expressway was terrible. Sometimes in first gear all the way.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it seriously inhibited our ability to drink champagne at work. And on Friday evenings, that was one of the things we used to do to encourage clients. We'd open a bottle of champagne and share it with them. So we had to be a bit careful about that.
Mm.
Yeah, so after transversing from Ngunnawal to Curtin every day, we decided the best thing to do was to move to Curtin. Mm. And I guess the other thing was the feeling with the clients and with just the people here. It was such a great suburb to move into.
Okay, but you haven't told me yet about the business moving to Curtin. That's what we've got to talk about, I think.
Yeah, that was kind of strange.
Yeah.
We got a Capital Chemists took over the chemist shop, and they increased our rent hugely. And following, you know, the tradition of the Lawtons, as soon as we got a big increase in rent, we moved. So we moved from Hughes and looked around for other accommodation near there. And the only thing we could find was the half of the space that was occupied by then NetSpeed. And we spoke to the landlord, and he seemed initially to be really positive about us moving into that space. So
perhaps we should explain, this space is indeed downstairs at Curtin, but it's a different building. So it's currently occupied the space under the Bendigo Bank and the optometrist.
That's right.
Real estate agent?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Club Lime.
And now it's Club Lime.
Club Lime,
yes.
So, yeah, we moved into there, and after we were there for, I think it was about 4, maybe 5 years, we then moved to the premises on the other side, and that move was quite horrendous.
Could you tell us about the flood first? That's sort of one of the legends of Curtin, I think.
The flood was terrible. Wes had just purchased his shop, the glasses shop upstairs. Mm. He was a friend of ours. Mm. I mean, everyone's like a little family in Curtin. And Simon can explain it better, but the hose fitting he attached to something he uses for grinding glasses just broke free, and so it was going full pressure down into the bookshop, saturating our first edition noddies and coming up to about knee level. It was incredible.
It's amazing you could get that amount of water in just 12 hours.
But prior to that, we were flooded out every month on a regular basis from the co-tenants' toilets. So we had grey water flooding every month you'd come in and you'd think, oh dear, I shouldn't have left those boxes on the floor. Mm.
It was almost like a menstrual cycle. Once a month there would be, I don't know, and then sometimes it would be 5 weeks, sometimes it would only be 3 weeks, depending how often the toilets were used. So you can imagine the excitement of coming in and opening the doors to the smell.
And, of course, people would bring their books in for us to look at, and if they were still sitting on the floor, we couldn't use them.
That sounded an awful blow to your business too, I expect. Did insurance pick up the
No, not on the monthly ones, but the insurance company did pick up the tab for the major flood, which was really good. They had a strange way of assessing our losses. The nodding big ears that Jen referred to, which were first edition in the United Kingdom, you'd pay something like £8,000 for them, about $20,000 in those days. And I think we got $8 each for the 23 volumes. But then on other books, which we thought were worth $20, $30, they were giving us $200. So it ended up, you know, roundabouts and swings about the right amount. It was kind of, yeah.
But it was a disaster. It was, financially, it was a disaster down there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It took us 3 months just to dry it out.
Any normal person, I think, would have wondered about whether they should keep going in this business. Yes. Did that cross your mind?
Yeah, so then we...
It was then we realised we weren't normal.
And we were thinking about selling our house then, because we just, you know, had no means of keeping going, really, so...
And we had to support ourselves and our staff during that period.
Yeah. And we had one, and still do, one fantastic member of staff who was working with us, Sue. And Sue helped us with the move when we did find new premises, because we were pretty much at breaking point. So having found out that Vinnie's was moving out, we contacted the landlord and said, we want in.
It took about 30 seconds to make that decision.
Yes, and they
right premises, underground.
They gave us the keys. Yeah. And we then spent 3 weeks, and we had 22
people,
mostly volunteers but some paid workers, helping us move from starting at 6 in the morning till 10 at night.
It was more than moving, I imagine. You had to establish bookcases and layouts.
It's quite scary moving a bookshop. You've got to take books off shelves so that you can – demolish the shelves, then move the shelves, rebuild the shelves and put the books back. And, it became quite frustrating at times.
When we were at Hughes, we had a removalist quote us $10,000 just to move them, not to do anything else. And that was when the bookshop was, you said 48 bays, Simon?
49
bays of books.
And had increased to about 200 bays at that stage, so...
Mm. And so we moved everything, got it all into an
up,
empty
across
shell.
Across and down.
Yes, up, across and down.
If only we could have had a tunnel, you know, that would have been great.
Some rainy days.
Now, what was you... Okay, you've got these premises. But what you would have seen when you moved into the old Vinnie's premises was a big concrete floor, and I think you told me a basin and an old laundry sink or something like that.
That's it.
So that's not what it is now. What were the ideas there?
Simon has an amazing ability to be able to create something really good out of nothing, and he's done architecture, but it's not because of that, because he just has a vision. So he just drew plans that would draw people in, you know, not just the shelves side by side, but the way they're divided, the space between the aisles. We wanted to be quite big so that people wouldn't feel cramped, and leaving space in all the corners to put little tables and chairs so people could relax. And it's grown from there. And, of course, Vinnie's had to pull down all their walls before we could do anything. And we had to put up walls so that we could separate the antiquarian room from the rest of the place,
and the reception area, make that
and
look
the reception
a little
area, and the cafe was on the cards, but that was a couple of years.
Well, I was going to say to a person going down to the bookshop now, I mean, there are two things that strike me as very different. I think they happen quite soon once you move. One is the cafe, and two is live music. Do you want to talk a bit about those? Perhaps we'll start with the cafe, about what you wanted to do and why you wanted to do it and what it meant.
Simon had an associate who is the person that started Coffee Guru, and we thought, great, because we knew absolutely nothing about coffee. So he called him and said, come and have a look at our space, and we'd love to, with your help, get a cafe started. And he came down and took one look, and we never heard from him again.
I had the idea that we'd be able to really provide an environment for people when they were shopping to be able to have a few breaks every now and again, have a cup of coffee, that sort of thing. And that's really where it sort of started, wasn't it?
Yes, yes.
Well, of course, not just a coffee shop. You get a cake and biscuits. You get a meal there now.
We do. We've employed two chefs since our discussions with Simon, and both of them have had a great input into the food. We've got to make it easy enough, because our staff keep reminding me that they are not chefs and shouldn't be called chefs, because they don't like doing anything too complex.
What about music? Do either of you have a background in performance or
no
promotion?
Not really. We both love music. Simon's been involved in musician promotion in the old.
Well, I got involved because I couldn't play, and all my friends were musicians, so I had to find something to do. But Jen is down playing her skills with the guitar. She used to go around Civic, I think, and play on Friday nights with busking and singing for the Lord and all that sort of stuff. But me, I was more involved in the promoting, and I think when I was about 17, I first started getting involved in running dances called Cosmic Heat at the student administration building at ANU, which turned out quite successfully. They were licensed dancers too. I couldn't buy a beer, but everybody else could. So, yeah, we started that, and then the opportunity, once we'd created our space with a cafe, I was looking for different sorts of things we could put in there. And Jen was thinking about chocolates and sort of the nice truffles type approach. And we both hit on the idea of music about the same time. And one of our friends wanted to come down and play, and it would only cost us $250 a gig.
Per hour.
Per hour, that's right. It's crazy. He must have been thinking very optimistically about our earnings at that stage. And but we did. We found a whole bunch of people, really good people, who wanted space, and they just wanted to get out there. Our first musician was a guy called Ross Rudd, who was really great on guitar, classical guitar. And then Milena.
Well, we had a few groups, and then Milena Cifoli came in, and she was watching the music, and I said, "Oh well, if you can play, I'll give you a free coffee." And so she sniggered and brought her guitar with her, and she was just amazing. Well, she still is, but she played classical music beautifully, and a little bit of Spanish. And her partner, Andrew, who we call Didgeridoo, played some pieces on the didgeridoo with her. And together, that was magic. Our favourite was Raining on the Rock. It was just a beautiful piece. And it's a shame they've parted ways, but Andrew's still very much part of Beyond Q, part of our family.
How long after moving in here were you sure you're onto a winner, like both with the books, the music, the food, the coffee? How long did it take?
Are we on a winner?
Good
question, yes.
We have an awful number of book dealers who have gone out of business since we've been here, and it's always a disappointment to see another bookshop close. But we seem to have been, for a long period of time, just increasing our sales and our turnover and all that sort of thing from month to month for, I guess, about 4 or 5 years. When the current government got elected, things changed. A lot of the client base were becoming unsure about their future employment and all those sorts of issues. And along with that change, I think we got a change in the sort of clients that came in. The clients that come in at the moment are wanting to be part of a social change, not just there to buy books and so on. So it's, although it's always been social sort of environment, hasn't it?
Mm. Oh, always. Yeah.
When we talked the other day, two words you use quite often struck me. One was community, the other was family. I don't mean just your family. I mean you're referring to a broader family, your clientele and so on.
Mm.
They're obviously very important to you in this
It is really important to both of us. Yeah. We I don't think we have an outside life. It's become our life. And there was a time we were sitting down enjoying a nice glass of red, and three German girls came in, and they were lovely, and they said they were travelling around Australia, they were in their gap year, and did we have any work? And we said, oh, we just don't have anything at the moment, I'm really sorry.
About two bottles of wine after that.
Yes, we then said, well, look, if you've got nowhere to stay, you can come and park your sleeping bags on the floor at our house.
They ended up staying with us for about 9 out of their 12 months.
No, they were there for about 12 months, I thought.
Oh, well, no, yeah. I thought they had to go on their 12th.
Yeah, they had to go back, but they were with us for close on 12 months, and we employed Natalie.
We ended up employing them, yeah.
Natalie, mostly, and the others were cherry-picking and
finding odd jobs around wherever they could.
And one of them took back an Australian with her to Germany.
Bentley, his name.
Bentley, yeah. Mm. So they became literally part of our family, with one person working with us, and they were just so, so gorgeous, those girls. And we've had other people come through that we've been able to help out in a small way, because we can't afford to pay high wages. But the people that come tend to stay on.
But there's been all sorts of exciting things. We've got one guy at the moment called Chris Bottomley, who has got to be probably one of Canberra's best piano players. And Chris is still, 19 at the moment. And he's had a huge impact on the way we make our coffee, the music we do. He helps us choose some of the musicians and all that sort of thing. But we've even had, we had a person come down. Yeah, Sam
from Belgium. Oh, he was amazing. He was passing through. He was staying.
He came down with a relative of his who lives in Curtin, and she wanted to show him that, you know, it was actually quite a cosmopolitan suburb. Not, that's were her words. And so she brought Sam with her, and Sam had apparently looked at our piano and said, "Does anybody ever play that?" And we said, yeah. But we had two pianos down there at that stage, not just one. And Sam said, "Do you mind if I tinkle about with them?" And I think it was you or was it me that said, "Can you actually play?"
Well, we said, go for it. And his music was so incredible. I've never heard anyone play the piano like that. He was so good. The second time he came in, we had one of the jazz groups playing, and he just sat down and played with them. And they loved it, and it was just incredible. And he turned out to be a young member from the Belgium Philharmonic Orchestra.
And, idea of, can he play a few notes?
I think also of book launches and poetry readings and things.
Oh, yeah. We've done a few of those. In fact, we recently did a poet with Joan, didn't we? And that turned out really nicely. We try and encourage book launches, particularly for local authors. And when we say local, they don't have to be Curtin. Canberra's local enough for us. And to try and get them to feel comfortable about what they're doing. And also, it's worked in another way. When people hear about the fact that we do launches, they come and ask for our advice about what publisher to go to and those sorts of things. And we've actually helped quite a few of them get their books published. Stephanie Reed is another good example. She's
she hasn't needed any help though.
No, Stephanie's become quite proficient in what she's doing. Mm. Very good, in fact. Mm.
How would you concisely describe your business now, if business is indeed the right word? What is it you do or trying to do?
Somebody said to me a couple of days ago that it's like church. They said, I don't go to church, this is my church. And they get a feeling of involvement in the community and family that they can't get anywhere else. I think that's really important to both of us, but of course we're always struggling to get the books in and out too, because that of course pays for everything to happen.
It's phenomenal, the number of books that come through.
Yes.
We need about 2,000 books a week and we get about 4,000.
Mm.
So it's always updating stock. And
the rest of the books just go straight to Lifeline.
Actually, that's the second
choice. We have other charities first, because Lifeline has too many books as well. Mm. So.
Well, they do from time to time.
Yeah.
With Lifeline, you've got to choose when you donate so that they're not up for the cost of storage of books.
Why don't we step out of the business now and think about Curtin? And you've been part of the Curtin for, 10 years now or more. And a couple of things have happened here that have significantly involved you, I think. Like several years after you came, the local branch of the Curtin, of the Commonwealth Bank, closed in Curtin. And the bank told its customers they had to do their banking effectively at Woden. Now, the community reaction to this decision eventually led to the establishment of a community bank, the Bendigo Community Bank. And when I walk past the Bendigo Bank any day, there's a big photograph there of Viola Kalokarinos and Simon Maddox. Now, obviously, Simon, you had some part to play in all of this. You want to tell us the story?
Yeah, it's I had some part to play, that's true, but Viola is the one that actually spearheaded the whole campaign and as a queen of Curtin, managed to convince all her subjects a lot of them, to invest in the bank. But the proposal to close the Commonwealth Bank, we became aware of that about 2 weeks before they closed. And then we approached the Bendigo Bank because of their community involvements in other places, and they ran a meeting at the Statesman Hotel. That turned into a lot of people saying, well, why don't you just open a bank? And they were explaining that they can't just open a bank. They've got to make sure it's totally viable. So a few of us were lambasted, for want of a better word, into actually making it viable. And it took an awful lot of time, it seemed, but we had to get millions of dollars into the bank before we could actually open the doors.
Mm.
So it was about 2 years of hard work, more so by Viola than anybody else, but we all put in the hours on that. It was, 2 years to the day, it was June the 9th that the first meeting was held at the Statesman, if I recall rightly. And it was June the 10th, I think, when we had the official opening.
Why was it important to you to put the effort into?
Well, we figured that we needed to make sure that the community centre, the shopping centre, had lots of different things you could do. You don't just want two or three different supermarkets or things like that. So we're looking for foundation storekeepers, I guess, and one of the foundation things really is a bank. And the sort of losing Commonwealth and not being able to replace it became a real issue for us. And also that we had a lot of old age pensioners who live around the area, or retired people, they don't have to be old, and some of them were feeling fairly fragile about going down to Woden, particularly where the Commonwealth Bank is currently located. So we were thinking about how to make things easier for them too, because they shop here. So that's really, that's really why we became involved.
Mm. And they've become a very valued member of the community, haven't they, Bendigo Bank?
They should have.
And in fact, they're one of the best performing Bendigo banks, community banks around, certainly in the ACT.
Mm. Simon was elected a director for a while, which meant going to a few
board meetings.
Board meetings.
And you know what board meetings are like. Well, you may not, but you can imagine. Watch a John Cleese movie on meetings, bloody meetings, and you'll know exactly what they're like.
Well, let's stay in Curtin. This is more recent. There was a the building which Beyond Q is located. It was, I think, the first building actually erected in the shopping centre back in the late 60s, I expect. Anyway, some years ago, about 2 or 3 years ago, the owners of that building floated a development proposal probably pull down and start again that particular building. Now, this had pretty quickly precipitated a strong reaction in the community. I remember coming to the shops on a Saturday morning and there were literally hundreds and hundreds of people there because they were concerned about the businesses in that particular building and also the shops themselves. There were many politicians. There were lots of speeches and what have you. Mm. So clearly the community felt very strongly about that. You were in the building itself. You would be much affected by this proposal. Do you want to tell us how all that emerged?
One of our clients, Piccadilly Pete, first alerted us to it because he saw these yellow posters that had been put upstairs, and he rushed downstairs and told us. So Simon went up to have a look at the posters, and they'd already been removed. And so that got us really quite concerned. And so...
Yeah, well, actually, it inflamed our reaction, I guess. Mm. And so we did a lot of searching around and eventually were able to get hold of the right government body, which said, yes, they had a proposal in and the posters would have to be reinstated. But it was an exercise where I guess everyone got together because they really were concerned that things were going to change and that we'd end up like any other local suburban shopping centre where there was no real feeling of community. And, we managed to get together a few people in downstairs in the bookshop and started a plan. We elected a chairperson and she looked after marketing the emails and sending them out to everyone. I think it was Val, I'm not sure. But she kept tight control over making sure that things were happening while the rest of us just made public announcements and got on radio and did all the things we probably shouldn't have done as tenants with our landlord standing over us. But it really did get everyone together, that's for sure.
Well, I really had such a strong feeling of community solidarity. Is that Saturday morning?
It was remarkable. There was about 1,500 people, I think, over the day. It was huge. Yeah. I know the Canberra Times said there was about 1,000, but I think when they were estimating 1,000, it was 1,500 over the whole day rather than...
Mm.
But, yeah, it was great.
It was incredible.
Well, perhaps we should just conclude by... I noticed there's a little article here in... a Canberra paper from earlier this year talking about Beyond Q, and it refers to your international reputation. And I'm not surprised, of course, given that room of fine books you've got and so on, and the musos you have performing. But I think you have to say there was another event that actually gave you an international reputation, and that was the raid by the military police. Mm. You want to tell us about that as a bit of an end to our conversation?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun, actually. We weren't even there when the military police raided us.
No, Sue was there and
Anyway, the military police came in and they confiscated all our military pamphlets. Now, every decent second-hand bookshop will have a bunch of military pamphlets, things that were produced from 1914 through to 1970, and they'll tell you how you should tie your shoelaces for dress parade or how you put together a bomb or dispose of a bomb, those sorts of things. And apparently some of these pamphlets were written by an iconic Australian fellow by the name of Ian Idris, and they become very sought after. One of our customers, a Defence Force customer, apparently wanted some of these Ian Idris things, but thought that our prices were too high. So he let the military police know that we had them all.
He dobbed us in.
And then he wanted to photocopy them once they'd got them all to the Department of Defence. But interestingly, we got the press on side. Canberra Times were great. They wrote about the article. Then it was followed up by television stations. And one television station came and did an interview. And then, unbeknownst to me, they sold the interview to an international broadcasting group of some sort or another. And one of our customers was in Washington, and on the news, just as he was about to ring his partner left here in Curtin, my head came up and I was talking about being raided by the military police. And we found out after that there was also a piece in the national news in Ireland.
Ireland, yes. It was actually outrageous what they did, because apparently they went way beyond their jurisdiction, because even if one of their own has a problem, they have to be accompanied by regular police, and that didn't happen. And they came back again when I was there, and I went to talk to them. And the one person was very friendly and polite, but the man behind him was really scary, and he took a few steps forward and was quite menacing. But it was really outrageous that they actually did that.
The American press said that is democracy about to be challenged in Australia?
Yeah.
It was incredible.
It took them 2 years to get back all the documents, to find the right people who could
actually read them. Well, and determine whether or not they were.
So they came back and no apologies, no nothing. Just,
but you got a clean bill of health.
Yes.
We did. Some security regulating.
We did. No. And in fact, some of the books didn't even relate to Australian military efforts or Americans. So.
Mm.
But it was fun.
Yeah, but it was great fun. I remember the press at the time. Any last thoughts about Beyond Q, about where you're heading?
I guess we've been approached by a number of people who want to do a Beyond Q in different parts of Australia, and we're really sort of looking at that very seriously at the moment, looking at franchising what we do. But I think that sounds very commercial, and by necessity it has to be, I guess. But it's getting the right person to make it work.
Mm.
So we're looking at other university towns, usually places like Wollongong and Newcastle, and hopefully there might be one opening somewhere.
Mm. Yes, it's all a little bit up in the air, because everyone has a demolition clause in their lease at the moment.
Yes.
So we don't really know what the future's going to hold.
Well, let's just hope it doesn't mean you go to Newcastle or Wollongong and go away from here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Ewan. That's great.
A great conversation. I enjoyed that very much.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.